What do you do when you realize that you're a woman trapped in a man's body?
What do you do when you realize the man you married is a woman?
In this series, we reflect on our past to discuss how we got here
and explore where we can go from this point moving forward.
Hi, and welcome to The Rage. My name is Jennifer Termini.
And I'm Calista Termini.
Today, we're going to be talking about parenting styles. What kind of a parent are you?
The most awesome kind of parent.
Okay. But, you know, I want to just add something here. I threw out a couple of topics this morning, and one of them was parenting styles, and the other one was dating sites and dick pics.
And I said, why not both? They're the perfect combination.
You opted for dating pics, dick pics and dating, and I felt a little too vulnerable in the moment because I'm experiencing a lot of that right now. And so I said, please, let's do parenting style. So, and my eyes are watering. I'm not crying over dick pics or parenting styles. But yeah, I feel like I can talk about that stuff when I'm on the other end of actually being in the midst of a whirlwind of dicks.
Jealous.
What?
I said, jealous. A whirlwind of dicks. Wow. Okay. Like, yes. Yes, please.
That sounds good to you. Farm to me.
Yeah. No, it doesn't actually sound good to me. I'm just, you know, I think the idea of it sounds better than the reality.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. I don't know why my eyes are watering like crazy right now. So anyway, yeah, let's talk about parenting styles. So okay. I wanted to ask you, do you think that the way we are parented by our parents is a huge driver or indicator on what type of a parent a person would be?
Undoubtedly. So first of all, you know that there are three categories that parents fall into. You have authoritarian, which are parents that don't give their children any autonomy. They control them quite fiercely. Then you have authoritative parents, which are parents that set rules and boundaries, but at the same time, they do allow their children to have some autonomy and make some choices for themselves. So that's sort of the middle of the road. And then you have permissive parents. And permissive parents kind of like just, you know, let their kids do whatever they want, don't really show up, or anytime that they try to enforce any sort of authority, it's inconsistent. And so a child doesn't really respond to that very well. So those are the three parenting styles.
What type of parent do you think I am?
Oh, I would definitely say you're authoritative.
And what type of parent do you think you are?
Authoritative.
When you gave those descriptions, I agreed with that. Prior to those descriptions, I felt as though I leaned a little more towards the permissive side. And I felt like you leaned a little more towards the authoritarian side. Mm-hmm. But I recognize we both do fall in the middle.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and here's the thing, like, it isn't like there's an exact script. As we know, parenting doesn't, I mean, I guess there are books written on it, but isn't like, yes. You don't have to pass a test to be a parent. And so a lot of it is
unfortunate.
In some ways, yeah, absolutely. For sure. That gets into a whole sociological debate. Like, does the state have the right to regulate birth? Well, they're already trying to do it with abortion. So anyway, who knows? Maybe in a few years there will be tests as to whether or not you can have children. So the point being, though, that, I think that you can fluctuate. You can lean more towards permissiveness and you can lean more towards authoritarianism. But I think we both try to you know, stay in the boundaries of that. I'll say one thing that I struggle with as a parent is actually, you know, as much as you say that I tend to be more authoritarian with her, I worry about being too loose with her, too permissive with her, because
that's interesting.
Yeah, well, because I don't really think that I'm I'm an authoritarian with her. You know, I have a really hard time. Like right now, you know, she uses crying or getting upset, getting really upset about things sometimes as a manipulation, and sometimes it's real. And so trying to figure out like, when is the right time to say, no, this is not okay. So for example, that's what it was on Monday. Athena, yeah, she woke up late because she didn't set her, she set alarms, but she slept through her alarms. She went to bed on time. But she just said, I don't understand why I've slept through my alarms. And she was really upset and was saying that she wanted to stay home. And I said to her, like, Athena, this is not negotiable. Like, you have to go to school. Like, unless there's a really significant reason, you know, the answer is no. And so she's like, you know. And I just felt like she's trying to emotionally manipulate me. And in that moment, I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't want her to be in a position of thinking she can just do that and that I'm going to roll over. And so I go and I say, Athena, I'm like, you have to go to school. This isn't, and pretty much what I just said, I said, this is not negotiable. You know, you have a responsibility and you need to show up. And so, you know, when she knew that I wasn't going to acquiesce, you know, she went back into her room. And then I felt bad. I felt guilty because I was like, am I not being sensitive to her? And this is the part that I really dislike, is part of me is wondering, like, will this, you know, in some way make her not like me? Because, you know, the fact that since we're not, you know, a couple and, or, you know, I don't see her all the time. I worry about, I want her to want to be here. And so I worry about, you know, being strict with her and that it will have the effect of being like, well, I don't want to be at dad's house. And so I struggle with that. So what ended up happening was I was continuing to get ready. And then she came out and she, at that point, was really emotionally distraught, crying and just, you know, breaking down. And so I went and I said to her, okay, I'm like, you know, you need to go to school, but I have to run to, I had to go to neurofeedback. So I said to her, you know, can I take you to school when I get back? That way it gives you some time to get ready and pull yourself together. And she said, yeah, that would be okay. And so that's what ended up happening. So I felt like that was a good compromise. And I think that's a good example, in my opinion, of being authoritative without being, you know, fully permissive of like, oh, you don't feel good. Sure, stay home. Because I don't think that's doing her any favors. You know, even if in the moment right now as a 14-year-old, she feels like, I don't understand what's the point of going to school. I hate it anyway. Kind of thing, like typical teenager thing.
Permission to speak? Because I feel like you're going to keep going and going and going.
Yes, I can keep going.
Going and going and going. And you've even got your Energizer Bunny Pink on.
I do. And coffee.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have coffee too. Good morning. Cheers.
Good morning. Cheers.
No, wait, do we go this way?
Yeah, we go this way.
Chaos in the morning.
No.
All right. So what I was going to say is I think that was a good compromise. I think you have a point with her getting overwhelmed and wanting to manipulate and drive the narrative that, you know, she can't go to school. And it reminded me of soccer when she didn't want to go sometimes to her club games or tournaments. And we would just say, no, we're getting up at 6:30 and we're going because this is our commitment and we're going to do it. And she would end up being happy once she got there and once she was settled in. There's something about the morning routine for her. If she's running late, it's a trigger for her. That's a pattern I've noticed. But she does respond to a little bit of compromise and then go, or no compromise, but you help her move along, you know. And then also, I think she responds well to talk. We talk her through it and we explain to her why we are pushing for her to go to school or why we're pushing for her. It's not that we're trying to be an asshole. It's not that we want to be strict with her. It's that we make commitments in this world. And it is very important to keep your word, keep your commitment. It shows integrity. It shows strength of character. There's a lot of life lessons there. Granted, there will be the occasion where she is truly sick or something is really going on that requires her a free day. A day to not be at school. And I support that, but I support her being at school more than not being at school.
Absolutely.
And I think you did the right thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch upon your comment about feeling guilty when you are strict and feeling like maybe you're not being a good parent if you're too permissive. There is a narrative that she is holding on to that is most likely false, but it's in her mind, it's her narrative. And I'm going to caveat this or preface this rather by saying when she has had false narratives in the past, therapists that we have talked to have said that we weren't really allowed to challenge that narrative because when you do, that child digs their heels in deeper. And before I say the narrative about you, I will say the narrative that was said about me. Years ago, she said, "Mom, you didn't raise me. Mom, you were never there for me." I was floored. I was there for her every day. I parented the hell out of her in a good way. I theme parties and soccer coach and Girl Scouts and Catalina trips and slumber parties and everything. I was there. And so in the middle of our separating, she said, "Dad raised me. You were never there for me." And do you remember this?
Yeah, I remember you telling me this. Yes.
And then, well, it was said in the group therapy as well. And our therapist at the time said, "You can't correct her." And you echoed that and said, "Yeah, you can't correct her. She will dig her heels in deeper. It's not a win-win situation for you to tell her that how she feels is wrong." It was like a therapy thing. And I said, at one point, I couldn't help myself. I go, "At what point do I let this train going to Timbuktu at 1,000 miles an hour? At what point do I stop it on its tracks? Do I let it get all the way to Timbuktu where it's so friggin' far away that I can't turn it around and the truth come out?" And she just, nobody really gave me a good answer. But then I came to the conclusion that I was going to create like photo books of her childhood so that she could see without words that I was present, that we did have a loving home. There was no good guy, bad guy between any of us. And I didn't create the books, but I did every once in a while send her Facebook memories of like fun little things. And now that narrative in her mind has flipped. And now she's back to, "You're a fabulous parent. You're wonderful. You're great." But it was not that way for a few years.
Yeah.
And I just kind of had to suck it up and just keep being the dutiful, good parent, being constant. And so here's the narrative that I've heard about you, or that I'm gleaning. She's afraid to come to you and ask questions that she thinks you're going to say no to. I don't know where that came from. And I will give a recent example. Like a current example that hasn't even, I just found out about this. She wants to go to a birthday party tomorrow. She's afraid that you will say no, or that you will put some kind of restriction on it. Meanwhile, she has not given you the opportunity to even give a response. She hasn't mentioned it to you yet, but in her mind, she's already building up a no scenario that you're going to say no. It's a birthday party for a 15-year-old girl at a hotel that parents are renting for the kids to be able to hang out in a local hotel, have dinner. I think some of them are spending the night. I don't think she is spending the night, but I think she wants to be able to attend the party and then be picked up. But she thinks that her pickup time might be later than you're willing to go. Like it might be 11 o'clock or midnight. And she thinks you're going to say no. So she's already worked herself up into a frenzy that she's not going to be allowed to go to this birthday party and that she's going to miss out on a social opportunity with some new friends and some old friends.
Right. So I agree. I haven't been given the opportunity and she's not talking to me about it. And so, you know, if she told me what you just told me, then it gives me the chance to respond, you know, and my answer is not going to be no, but I'm going to want to have details. Like the first detail is, are parents going to be present?
I asked her that and she didn't know the answer, but she said, Mom, let's get real. What 14, 15, 16-year-old wants to hang out with their parents? And I said, I understand that, but I need to know that parents are aware that it's parents who have bought this hotel, that parents are somewhere in the vicinity, whether it's a block away or in the hotel in another room. I need those kind of details. You need those kind of details. Yes. I said, I want phone numbers.
Yes.
I want to know who's going to be there. You know, and she starts rattling off a list of names, some of which I've met and I know, but I don't know this new person. That's not a bad thing. I've let her go with people that she didn't know, but I got the parents' number. I was able to have a conversation, a little quick hello.
Sure. And so, you know, to that end, my concerns are the same as yours. Like, how would you feel if she said, no, there's not going to be any parents there?
Well, I don't mind her because I don't mind them not being in the room there, but I want the parents to be aware of.
In the vicinity, but like, don't you think like the parents should be like the parents just pay for the room and drop the kids off and you have 14 and 15-year-olds like on their own?
No, that happens at a pizza parlor. That happens at Universal Studios. That happens at just because it's a hotel room doesn't mean nefarious things are going to happen.
Well, I don't think that there's going to be a sex party, if that's what you mean, or something like that.
I think the parents, I think there's going to be food that's going to be ordered. And I think it's just a place, kids like to be in a place that's not their home. I'm noticing this trend when I hear kids talk. They want to know, they think it's cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, the point is I just want details. And for the most part, if other parents are allowing their kids to do it, I'm not going to not let Athena do it.
And if you're picking her up and she's not spending the night, you know, you'll be able to see what's going on. But even if she did spend the night, if we had phone numbers, if we had a quick talk with the parent, just to make sure that they were aware that, because I said, Athena, I just don't want it to be like your friend just gathered money and everyone's just renting a hotel room without parents knowing what's going on. Well, that doesn't work for me.
Well, and you can't as a, you know, like you can't rent.
Oh, so there you go. So that lets us know that there potentially are parents, but I still want a phone
number. Well, the parents have to be the ones they're the ones that are liable for if there's like destruction or anything like that, or anything goes wrong, the parents are liable, but also, you know, you and I are liable too. Like if Athena did like, and she wouldn't cause she's a good kid, but if she did something illegal, we would be, or if she destroyed something, we would be liable for that.
So I think that's a good reminder to give her that information. But I also think to give it in a way that says, we trust you, we love you, but we want you to know that these things are our responsibility as well. So she's aware, but we've had a lot of conversations about behavior and how it affects parents get legally involved, have to be in certain situations with certain things. I won't get into that, but you know, there's just been stuff that comes up with kids' behavior. But I do believe that she is on the right path right now as far as being a good kid. Mm-hmm. But she definitely wants to establish, you know, she wants to grow her social network. Mm-hmm. And high school is only 4 years. It's going to be over. And I want her to have some fun experiences.
Yeah, I don't think either one of us is stifling her from having, you know, childhood experiences of, you know, hanging out with friends and being able to go places. In fact, when do we ever say no is really the question that comes
up. I have before, not often, but if it seems, she's asked me if she could ride in a car with a teenager who just got their license. And I said, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. They're not allowed to drive you. And I don't want you in a car with a brand new driver without a parent. And so I say no to that. I said no one time she wanted to go somewhere late at night. And I said, absolutely not. So most of the time I say yes, but that's because I meet the parents. Mm-hmm. I get a phone number. She gives me enough information to build my trust. And there's some visibility, some transparency.
Yeah. So, you know, I think you probably say no more than I do. And I think you're given more opportunity to do that than I am. In this case, I'm not even given the benefit of the doubt. And I'm not here playing victim, being like, oh, she's not even telling me. But, you know, that's her narrative, as you said. And I've, you know, had conversations with her about, like, you know, our relationship and how, you know, I'm on her side and everything, you know, and
just having that conversation, because that's what I had to do. I had to keep having the conversation of, I'm on your side. Yeah. I am your biggest fan. Yeah. I'm here to help you, not hinder you, but I have questions.
Yeah.
I had to say that for years. I mean, I don't know if you knew what was happening for a few years.
I
couldn't even touch her without her physically recoiling from me as if I was a fire monster.
Yeah.
And it's like, I haven't done anything but be kind. So you might be experiencing that right now. Not to the same degree, I don't think, but it's just a false narrative
that
we need to be vigilant to get through.
Yeah. I think also on that same Monday, I'm trying to remember what it was. I knocked on her door to go in her room to ask her something. Oh, I think it was asking her about, like, setting her alarm. What it was, like, making sure that she set her alarm for Tuesday morning. And she was, you could tell that she was a little distraught. And I was like, what's the matter? And she's like, nothing. And I went to move towards her and she just goes, get out. And I was like, oh, okay. And I went and I turned around and closed the door. And I, you know, and there, as much as part of me wanted to be like, well, that wasn't cool, I also know that for her, what was going on was emotionally overwhelming and she didn't want to, you know, crack in front of me. And so I, you know, respect and want to give her her space. So, you know, part of, I think, you know, there's a little, like, and I didn't readdress it. Like, part of me was like, you don't get, like, the part of the more authoritarian part of me was like, you don't talk to me that way. But at the same time, I understand, like, she didn't mean it that way. She was coming from a place of, you know, heightened, you know, emotions. She's dealing with, you know, hormones. And so a lot of times, and she's talked about, you know, how she's struggling with some of her emotions now because, you know, they can be so overwhelming. So,
yeah, you know, that's true. And if I may, she is going through different relationships with female friends that are sort of in and out and hot and cold. And she's starting to be interested in boys and just kind of navigating that world. And so it's a touchy time.
Yeah. And so, you know, I give her her space. I don't want to then, you know, make her feel ashamed for asking for the space that she needs. I started to come in the room without asking. And so I do believe, like, even at that age, like, consent is important, even between a child and an adult.
Well, it allows them to feel like they have control over something, you know, and if they don't have control of their space, their environment, then they start controlling their food, their body, their other things that become unhealthy. So,
sure.
Yeah. But this parenting thing, it's no joke. It's not easy.
No,
it's
ma'am.
Not for the weak. It's, it's very emotionally, it's hurtful when they do that to us because we've given their pieces of us and we've given our whole world to them. We want nothing but joy and love and happiness for them. Mm-hmm. But we also don't want to be pushovers and the permissive parent that just lets the kid do anything and everything without any boundaries because that doesn't make a kid feel safe. And so it's this fine line of being friendly and being their parent and being keeping them safe.
Yeah. And I also feel like consistency is important too, because, you know, she's 14 now, she'll, you know, be 18 before you know it. And me knowing something about, you know, child psychology and development and, you know, the development of the brain, you know, right now her world is still focused around, you know, her feelings and, you know, her empathy isn't as strong as it will be, in 4 years from now. So, you know, realizing, like, I think a mistake that a lot of parents make is that they expect their children to act with the same sort of conscious awareness that they do. And the fact of the matter is, like, it isn't there. And I attest to that. Like, I remember being 14 and having...
I'm sorry, my mom's calling. Let me tell her to stop interrupting our podcast. Oh, gosh, buddy.
Yeah, hello. You know, but hello. I didn't, you know, I really didn't have, you know, a sense of compassion towards my parents when I was that age. If anything, I was very ambivalent towards both of them. But a lot of that, too, was in response to, you know, how they were at that time.
How do you think was their, how would you describe their parenting style?
Inconsistent and permissive. You know, they would try to enforce rules, but they were so inconsistent. And then they didn't hold to their own examples. And so I ended up feeling, as far as both of my parents are concerned, I didn't respect either one of them as a child, as a teenager. I, more so than anything else, I think I, you know, there was definitely, I hated them in some ways. I didn't respect them. And I think that they made a lot of really bad choices. And I think that there was a lot of self-serving choices that my mother made. And these are things that I still struggle with to this day because of the impact that they had on me.
Some of the stories that you told me during our marriage were very ones of strict behavior. There was a regulation over the food that you ate, regulation over things that you did. But I just remember in particular, food was a big one, like with your mom, that she restricted things. And she had good intentions. You know, she didn't want you having red dye. That's a bad thing. She didn't want you having sugar. But it was over the top, it seemed like. And as a consequence to that, you had issues around that kind of stuff, like where you wanted to binge on it, right?
Well, you know, no, I didn't. I wouldn't say I wanted to binge on it. It wasn't like that sort of a, you know, response on my behalf. But the thing that I think really like upsets me now is that the whole reduction in, you know, sugar and the things that I ate was her response to my behavior.
Oh, like a punishment?
No. You know, I'm pretty sure that, you know, I was diagnosed, well, not diagnosed, but
it was suggested
that I had ADHD. And so,
she was trying to help then by giving you nutritious food, right?
She thought, like, if, you know, if I don't give my child sugar, that will solve the problem. Of course, it didn't solve the problem. What would have solved the problem is if I had received ADHD medication. So she didn't do that. She did that because she went against the advice of, you know, medical professionals and decided this is what I'm going to do. I think there's for me this frustration that my school years and my education could have been so much easier for me if she had, you know, instead of coming up with this cockamamie idea that I'm just going to regulate what my kid eats and that's going to fix the problem and going against medical advice. So, you know, I mean, I lifelong have struggled with, you know, and I'm older now, so I'm able to hold my attention a lot better. But in grade school and, you know, even in college, if something doesn't interest me, I can't hold my attention. And like reading things that are just dry and banal, you know, going through psychology textbooks even now has been really difficult, which makes me think, yeah, I wonder if I should, you know, do something about it now. Like
So you're talking about if you had had medicine for focus when you were younger, you think you would have done much better.
I think I would have done tremendously better.
I see. So you kind of think she did you a disservice and maybe you hold a grudge for that.
I definitely hold a grudge for her because she has always been someone who, you know, does what she thinks is best, and she can be very narrow-minded about that. Uh-huh. She gets, you know how she gets. She gets an idea in her head, and then she's like, "No, this is the way it is." And then she's obstinate to the point of refusing to listen to anybody else because, you know, she doesn't want to look bad or she doesn't want to be wrong. And I think she really did me a disservice in that respect. The service that, you know, has had a significant impact on my life.
I hear you. Yeah. So, and then I do remember when we were parenting Athena when she was younger, there would be behaviors that you learned as a child that then you would echo or repeat in your parenting style. And I remember bringing, and I'll just make one little example, and it wasn't a big deal, but it was something where it was kind of an aha moment for you, I feel like, and you tell me if it was or wasn't. I went to Costco and I bought like 24 pack of pudding cups and chocolate pudding cups. And you were like, "Get rid of these immediately. No child of mine is eating these, you know, synthetic pudding cups from Costco." And I said, "Oh, really? Like, it's just live a little. Like, can you, she wants it. It's not going to, you know, kill her. Maybe over a lifetime it would, but right now, a little bit in moderation, she's going to be fine." And you were like, "Absolutely not. No, no, no." We started to argue. And I said, "Is this how you were raised, like this?" Right. And you go, "Yeah." And I go, "And how'd that feel? Did you like that when you were a kid?" And you said, "No." And then as soon as I said that to you, your whole demeanor shifted. You were like, "Yeah, I didn't like that as a kid. So why am I now trying to do that to my kid?" And I felt like that was an aha moment for both of us. It's like, I realized why you were the way you were, and you realized what you were doing. And then we kind of shifted and tried to give her mostly good food, but a Jell-O cup, a pudding pop, it's okay. She's going to be all fine.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. You have given our child cancer now and taken years away from her life because of those pudding pops, you know?
We all are going to get cancer at some point.
Well done. No, you're absolutely right. You know, you're absolutely right. And yeah, we can't help but be influenced by our parents and the things that they've done or failed to do. So I think that, I think another thing that we were very consciously aware of and mindful of with raising our daughter was making sure that she was given the opportunity for socialization and autonomy. We wanted to build somebody who had a good sense of their own self-esteem. And part of that is allowing her to make her own mistakes. And I think
be a little bit of a risk taker.
Telling her like, "No, I'm not going to do that for you. You can do it yourself." Kind of attitude with respect to, you know, like, I know, like, for example, there was a period of time where she didn't want to, you know, order at a restaurant. She wanted me to do it for her. And I'm like, "No, you could do it. You need to be able to talk to people and things like that." And just being there, but giving her the confidence to be like, "Yes, you can do this." And that's sort of
practice.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, undoubtedly, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are, your parents leave their mark on you at the root level of your being. And so good, bad, or indifferent, how we choose to respond to that is clearly based on, you know, how we view our childhood. If we had a good childhood and like, "Oh, I want to model more of what my parents did." Yeah. But there's also no telling what kind of a child you'll have in terms of their genetic predisposition. And so I think that it also requires that you have to be able to adjust your style to fit the child, because what works for one child doesn't work for another.
Yeah. So I grew up in a household that I feel was more loosey-goosey, more permissive. But I was very good at self-regulating. And maybe it's the generation that we grew up in, Gen X, but I was alone all day. I had to I would get up in the morning. My mom was there, but she worked. My parents were divorced. My siblings were much older. So I was alone in the house mostly. And I would get up and we would, you know, make toast and breakfast, whatever. And I would get myself dressed, pack my lunch, do my thing. I'd take off for school. My mom would take off for work. I'd walk to school about a mile, maybe, through local neighborhoods. And I'd cross a busy street. And then I would get myself home around 3:30 alone. I would make a snack. I would watch Tom and Jerry. I would go out in the streets and I would be out in the streets until dark with neighborhood kids riding bikes, riding skateboards, in some cases riding motorcycles at 10 years old. My mom never knew. We would go down to the cliffs. We would go into storm drains. I mean, that was so dangerous. We would hide in ice plant. We would climb trees to the toppest limb. I mean, we could have died more times than I can count. We would throw pine cones at cars. I mean, we were bad for a while there because we had no supervision. We would go to the local liquor store and we would not buy liquor, but we would play video games and we would buy Twinkies and Orange Crush and eat the worst food. And somehow I survived because I literally was not driven very many places. I had to get myself to my soccer games, softball games by bike, by bus, by shuttle. And it wasn't that my mom was a bad mom. She was a great mom, but she just was doing her thing and I was doing my thing. And we always had dinner, you know, not at the table always. We would sit in the living room, whatever, but I always felt safe. So I find it so interesting that basically I was a latchkey kid and now I've got a kid. She is hardly left alone. I mean, she's left alone now a little bit, like for an hour or two if I'm working or I have to run to do something and she's home because she's older. But when she was younger, I don't recall ever leaving her alone. I drive her everywhere. She doesn't walk anywhere. She doesn't ride a bike anywhere. And I feel bad about that.
Well, this is also... this is also Los Angeles. You know, you don't let your kid walk. You know, I mean, this, and we also, it is a different time.
You and I lived in a very similar neighborhood growing up. Different. I was on the West Coast. You were on the East Coast. But there were trees. There were neighbors. There was forest.
Definitely. You know, I grew up in colonial New England, and bad things didn't happen there to white people. You know, and so there was a lot of privilege, and so there was a lot of safety in the privilege that I had growing up, you know, for one thing, white in, you know, the suburbs, in a, you know, fairly affluent town. So it did, it allowed for, you know, a lot of just being safe, I guess. And, you know, I think that we still live in a very, you know, we still live in with privilege, to this day.
But I don't feel like it's as safe. Like where we live, there's a lot of crime. There's a lot of homeless. Well, there's a lot of things. Yes. And all of her friends live too far to walk. Yeah. And so I end up driving her everywhere. I mean, most parents do. They drive their kids everywhere. Yeah. And you and I went to every soccer game. I think my mom went to one, two, maybe, you know, and it wasn't that she was a bad person. She just like, it's just like boomers just didn't, they weren't that involved in their kids' lives and the kids just did their own thing. To be sweet to my mom, because she is amazing. She would put fresh flowers by my bed. She would put fresh fruit by my bed. She was always there to give me a hug, always there to, you know, help me when I needed help, but I didn't need her a lot and she was doing her thing. So, but I feel like it's just so different now.
It's very different. And, you know, to that end, I would say that it's a different world. Like the safety of, you know, walking from here to Baskin Robbins, like she wanted to do one time, like absolutely not. I mean, because
would you have let her do it during the daytime?
No, I would not.
Really?
No, because the reason why is because I would be too concerned. I mean, it's, you know, first of all, it's a crazy busy street. She has to, you know, cross the exit ramp to a major freeway where people are like flying, you know, off the freeway. There's homeless people around. And, you know, you hear about, you know, people get abducted. They just, you know, a van door opens and they grab a couple girls and, you know, what are they going to do? And it is, it happens. Like, there's child trafficking and child abduction and things like that. So it's, I don't feel that, while the likelihood of that happening may be very low, it is definitely not zero. And if, God forbid, anything ever happened, I would hold myself responsible and I would never be able to forgive myself.
No, I get that. It's just so hard because kids do need to be able to have some autonomy. They need to be able to learn how to manage risk. They need to learn how to cross the street, do all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
If we shelter them and bubble wrap them, I mean, one of our good friends was taking shuttles and subways all across busy cities at age 10. I can't even imagine that now, but a lot of people grew up that way.
Sure.
And they're here today to tell the tale.
And again, I think that she is, that's a difference. It was a different time, too. And there were a lot more kids that were doing that. When I'm driving down the road, I don't see 14 and 15 year olds walking down the road. If I did, that would definitely stand out. And it's going to stand out to someone who maybe has ill intent. However, when I go to, you know, taking her to the mall and she goes to her friends and does everything that she wants to do at the mall, when I go there, I mean, like, you just see hundreds of kids, you know, from, you know, 10 to 12 to 14 to 16. So that, I feel, is a safe environment for her.
And they've got their friends. It's like a buddy system. Yes. You know, there's a group of them to kind of keep looking out for each other.
Yeah. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay.
Oh, sorry. I'm getting another phone call. I'm going to tell you no. So sorry.
Okay. So, you know, I don't think, you know, bubble wrapping her constitutes not letting her to, you know, cross a busy freeway where, you know, you could have somebody high on meth getting off the freeway going 80 miles an hour and doesn't stop because there's no stop sign. You know what I mean?
That's extreme, but I get your point.
It is. It is. you know, but again, we have a lot of concerns that, when we were her age, like, the hardest drugs that were out there was like cocaine and LSD. Now there's like fentanyl, and, you know, and they're putting it in all kinds of things. They're putting it in things that weren't even intended to necessarily be, you know, an illicit drug. And, you know, people.
And she's very aware of that. And she's like, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I have said to her and has been that I don't care where you are or what's going on. I never want you to worry about getting in trouble. If you're in a situation where you don't feel well, or if you think somebody's given you something, or you don't feel like you're in a safe environment, I've told her it's a no questions asked policy. You just tell me where you are and I will come get you immediately. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. And, you know, and then if there's something to talk about later, then, you know, we'll talk about it. But don't ever feel like I'm going to be angry at you for doing, you know, for being in a situation that's out of your control. I would rather that you call me and feel like I'm safe for you to, you know, talk to me without thinking I'm going to get angry or shame you.
I love that you said that to her. I love it. I do the same thing. I think it's really important for them to know. I tell Athena lately, I've been telling her, you know, I love you with a messy room. Even if you have a messy room, I don't love her to have a messy room, but it's like, she doesn't want me to come near her room because she thinks if I look inside and I see that there's forks and knives and dishes and things that I'll freak out. Cause I often do. I'll be like, good Lord, like, how many dishes do you have in here? Can you do some laundry? Like, come on, like, at least have a pathway to your bed.
Yeah.
And so she doesn't want me to come near it. So the other day I said, listen, I don't like it when you do that, but I'm going to love you regardless. I'm going to love you with a messy room. I'm going to love you on your bad days. I'm going to love you when you make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I love you. So I'm here for you. And yes, do I want things to improve? Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to reject you. I'm not going to not love you, because I think she worries about that sometimes.
I do,
you
know,
people aren't good. She's not lovable. So I love, those are my words. She didn't say that, but, you know, the idea that if we're not making someone happy, maybe that's my issue of, like, needing to please, you know, if I'm not making you happy, then you're not going to like me. And then if you don't like me, then I'm not worthy and blah, blah, blah. That's not necessarily her issue. I think she has more self-confidence. But anyway, I just love that you said that to her.
Yeah. Every day that I drop her off at school too, I tell her, you know, bye, have a great day. I love you. I never get an I love you back, but it's not about me getting that I love you back. It's about me saying it to her so that she knows that I love her.
That's good because it's consistent. But also, I think we should start incorporating other words, other self-esteem building words like, you know, I respect you, or I like your ideas, or you're really smart, or that's a great thing that you just did, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, one of the things that I did talk to her about, and this was,
I'm proud of you. That's a good one.
Yeah. I've definitely told her that I'm proud of her. With certain things, I've also, told her like, hey, you know, someone tells you no, including me, that's an opportunity to negotiate. You don't just have to accept a no. Always use it like, okay, so how do I get to a yes and negotiate?
And I've always told her that too as a kid. I said, I don't mind if you have a good rebuttal. Mm-hmm. I can listen to it. It doesn't mean I'm going to change my mind, but I don't mind you making a case, a good case, you know, for whatever you want.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, you know, I think that we're doing, as most parents try, we're doing the best we can. There's no such thing as perfect. I think if there was a test, we would get a passing grade with notes.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's really the best that you can do. I think
we get a solid B, solid B.
I think a solid
A minus.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. We'll see how the next few years shape up. But I think the point being is that we are both consistent with her. We are consistent in our messaging, as far as expectations are concerned.
And I do feel like we're aligned. We're aligned in that way.
I do too.
It really helps when you and I have these kind of conversations, because sometimes misunderstandings happen. Sometimes old ideas of how a person acted and behaved, like you had mentioned in other episodes, the ghosts, you know, the ghosts of our old behaviors sometimes creep into each other's minds, I imagine. And so it's really nice to be in the present, talking about real-time stuff and listening to each other. And this forum kind of provides that we have to be quiet and listen, let the other one talk, especially on Zoom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's something that a takeaway that people might like think about.
Yeah.
You have to let a person talk and you have to listen to them.
Yeah.
And even if you don't agree.
Yeah. And I'll just say this too, because we haven't really mentioned it, but you know, my gender identity does not factor in my relationship with her. I am authentic with her being myself. And so I think that as a trans person, a lot of times we worry about what other people think of us. I know with, you know, several clients and other people I've known in the community, there's always this feeling of, you know, having to perform for acceptance. And with our daughter, I am just myself. And I feel that I am more emotionally available to her being this way. You know,
you're more communicative. You're much more communicative.
Yeah. And some could argue that, you know, the argument has come up not recently, but the idea that I did this out of selfishness, when the reality is that I was, you know, so emotionally cut off from myself that the person who I would have been for my daughter had I not transitioned would not have been as emotionally available and nurturing and supportive of her as I am. And I hope that by showing her the example of how I lead my life and being authentic and true to myself, I hope that that sets a better example for her in terms of, you know, her, you know, living according to, you know, her authenticity.
You are not hiding. You're not holding secrets. You're not pretending to be something other than who you are. And that's a gift to yourself. That's a gift to her, because she now gets to see who the real you, and you guys can have a deeper, more meaningful relationship.
Yeah.
And this teenage years are just hard no matter who you talk to. I can't, we're not alone in problems, and these problems will pass, and they are so typical and so normal, whether you're cis or straight or gay or bi or trans or queer or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Parenting's tough. Kids go through this. And I think the messaging that I want to put forth is be consistent, stay positive. Don't try to force things on your kid, but be present. Keep trying. Don't give up. Sometimes you have to give a little space to that kid and not make them talk to you every single day or make them tell you how you're feeling, because it usually doesn't yield good results. If you're consistent and your messaging is clear that you are there for them through the good and the bad, eventually they will relax, they will open up. And in the case with our daughter, certain things helped her get there. Glasses, some of the medication, a few little things that she needed to kind of help her get over some anxiety, some issues, and it's paying off.
Yeah, and compassion and understanding too, I think, are important.
This is kind of totally off topic. Well, kind of off topic. So it might be for another episode. And I want to plant a seed. I had heard online, actually through Joe Rogan, because I don't normally watch him, but he comes across my feed every once in a while. And he's talking about how terrible Xanax is. And that's not something that we're taking or our daughter's taking or anything like that, but that it can create like alcoholism, that it can create like big problems. So I'm just curious, like there are drugs that people take for anti-anxiety, anti-depression, or ADHD medicines. And are we going to find out that someday that some of these have bad side effects in the long run? I'm just curious.
Well, first of all, as long as it's coming from Joe Rogan and not a peer-reviewed medical, white paper, what's not to believe? The class of drugs that that is in is what's called a benzodiazepine. And it is not intended for everyday use. It is to,
like an emergency pill if you're really having a freak out.
It's taken as needed for, anxiety and depression, but it is, it is a sedative. And with benzodiazepines, if you become, there's a physical addiction to it where if you then suddenly withdraw, it will kill you. So,
That's what was said also.
Yeah.
And maybe a predilection to, maybe with alcohol too. If you drink a lot of alcohol and then suddenly you stop, like I think it can have negative effects. People maybe can die.
But here's
like
the thing.
When people are alcoholics and then they go sober. Haven't you heard that? Like sometimes people, they'll quit and then they die. And you're like,
because
sober. How?
Because the body becomes chemically addicted to those, to substances like alcohol and things like that. It's really sad and it's unfortunate.
So taking drugs is not to be done lightly. It is to be consulting with physicians and psychiatrists.
You should always, when you're talking about, like, look at the opiate addiction problem that has happened in this country. Benzodiazepines, again, horrible for your system. Numbing ourselves and self-medicating with drugs and alcohol is like the American way. But now I will say that, when you're talking about antidepressants, specifically what are called SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, those are very, very different than the class of drugs that you're talking about. And people have been taking SSRIs for decades, myself included, without any long-term health problems as a result. If anything, and I'd say this for a fact, it has contributed immensely to my ability to lead a happy and joyful life.
So I noticed you looked at your watch, and I am looking at the clock right now because I have to be at a job site in half an hour.
Yes.
So let's sign off on this parenting episode, and thank you for agreeing to talk about it. I think it was interesting. Hopefully our listeners and viewers will agree and maybe they'll have some input.
Well, and
so
I'm sure
that, watching everybody.
Yeah, plenty of them are dealing with a lot of the same issues we are. So, yeah, thanks for watching. Hit that subscribe button below if you want to see more episodes.
Like and share and comment and help us on Patreon if you want to help support this channel. That is where we can accept donations and we can have new patrons. So we welcome you with open arms if you so desire.
Yes, thank you for all your support to our current patrons, and we will see you next time. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning into The Rage. If you haven't done so already, please hit the like, share, and subscribe button now. We truly appreciate all your wonderful support. Find us on social media at The Rage Episodes and leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Want to get more involved? Join us on Patreon. Supporters receive extra benefits as well as access to member-only content. Thanks again and have a beautiful day.